So we've been talking about the names of God. One of the things I didn't really foresee in studying these different stories about God's name, God's nature, is that it really gives us a model for who God might be for us throughout life, in the midst of the challenges we face. These kinds of stories that are scattered throughout the Bible give us a richer, a deeper way of thinking about who God is for us. Our story for today is the story of Job, and we're reading from Job chapter 16. "Surely now God has worn me out. God gives me up to the ungodly and casts me into the hands of the wicked. I was at ease and he broke me in two. He seized me by the neck and dashed me to pieces. He set me up as his target, his archers surround me. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin and have laid my strength in the dust. My face is red with weeping and deep darkness is on my eyelids. Though there is no violence in my hands and my prayer is pure, O earth, do not cover my blood. Let my outcry find no resting place. Even now, in fact, my witness is in heaven, and he that vouches for me is on high. My friends scorn me, my eye pours out tears to God that he would maintain the right of a mortal with God as one does for a neighbor. For when a few years have come, I shall go the way from which I shall not return." The book of Job, as we can see in that scripture, is largely a book about the question of suffering. Why do the innocent suffer? Why do bad things happen to good people? And where is God in all of this? Why isn't God stepping in to fix it? Job is a character being tested, much like Abraham, who we talked about last week. The accuser in the story is given divine permission to put Job to the test, though Job doesn't really know. From his point of view, he's just suffering. For much of Job's life, he has been blessed with good health, a family, abundant wealth. But all of this begins to rapidly fall apart. Job loses all of his livestock, all of his wealth is gone, and then in a heartbreaking, faith-shaking kind of turn of events, a mighty wind comes and their house collapses, and Job loses his whole family too. As if that wasn't enough, Job was soon inflicted with painful sores from head to toe. And still, after all of this, it seems that Job is faithful. Job's friends soon come around to sympathize with him. And at first, they just sat with him in silence for 7 days and seven nights. That's a really great model for being a good friend. Just sit through it all. Just be present. Unfortunately, then Job's friends open up their mouths, and they only make things worse. They start to accuse Job of sinning and bringing all of this suffering on himself. It was and still seems to be a common belief that suffering is a punishment for sin. But Job defends himself and begins to question, is God to blame? Is God really being the cruel one in this relationship? Eventually, Job wanted to just be done with his life. He goes from being patient and agreeable to being angry, frustrated, and questioning God. Job begins to lament, to weep, and to cry out to God. A lament is a common form of prayer in the scriptures. To mourn and to cry out to God in grief and sorrow is one of the ways that scripture teaches us to pray. There's a whole book in the Bible called Lamentations. The book of Psalms is filled with all kinds of laments. There's actually more psalms of lament in the book of Psalms than there are any other type of psalm. And this lamenting of Job goes on for quite some time. Much of the book of Job is this kind of crying out to God. At one point, as we read in our scripture today, Job is still trying to declare his innocence, and he cries out, even now my witness is in heaven, and he that testifies for me is on high. Job wants his day in court, and he believes that he should be defended, that he should be saved from his earthly suffering. And so he calls out for an advocate, an angel, or some member of the heavenly council to defend him, or maybe God will intercede. And later, Job cries out again for this type of advocate, and he says, I know that my Redeemer lives. We've heard those words. I know my Redeemer lives. Job hopes, he believes that that's who God is, that that's God's name, Redeemer. In response to all these questions that Job has, these doubts, this anger toward God, it seems that God is silent, that God is absent, God's not responding, at least. No answers from God to all of these questions that Job has, that we too may have about the mysteries of life, the question of suffering. Mother Teresa, who is just canonized, just became a saint last week. She's a famous Catholic nun, inspirational, who gave her life to serve God and humanity. She was once asked what she would say to God in heaven if and when they met. And in response, she said that God has got a lot of explaining to do. God has a lot of explaining to do. After all of Job's weeping and praying and crying out for an advocate or a redeemer, there's nothing, it seems. No answers from God, no explaining whatsoever. And this is not unlike what it feels like for us sometimes. Sometimes it seems that we've gotten no answers to our prayers. Sometimes not the answer we were looking for. Sometimes silence, it seems. I read a story about a woman who was going through a really difficult time. She had a screaming, fit-throwing toddler on her hands, and then a family crisis came on top of that. And through it all, she was kind of blaming herself for her mourning. She was lamenting her lamenting. But then her mother, witnessing all of this, she stepped in and asked her, so what do you do when your son throws himself on the floor in frustration and anger? And she told her, I do what I can to help him, try to calm him down, maybe hold him until he stops flailing, or give him a little space to cry it out. And the mother asked, so do you ever decide that you've just had enough, that you don't love him anymore, that you're just through with him? Of course not. And she said, that's the way it is with God. God is not immune to your pain. God, too, is there helping you through it. So yell and scream, throw yourself on the floor, cry and pound your fists and ask why. And know that God is there loving you through it. For chapter after chapter, Job has been asking, and there's been no answer to these questions. Why? Silence. And in the end, Job never exactly gets the answer he was looking for. But God does finally respond. And when God responds, we're given more than just a little name for God. For four full chapters of Scripture, God speaks. God describes who God is, that God is certainly the Redeemer that Job had hoped for and more, that God is Redeemer, the Creator, the Sustainer of the universe. And some of the most powerful and beautiful poetry in the whole Bible. God doesn't just give Job an answer. God doesn't try to explain it. Instead, God speaks. God responds with beauty. Jason, could you play a little bit? Chapter 38, it says, Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy. Who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment, and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed bounds for it, and set bars and doors, and said, thus far shall you come and no farther. Have you commanded the morning since your days began, and caused the dawn to know its place? Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare if you know all of this. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail? Who has cut a channel for the torrents of the rain and a way for the thunderbolt? As the rain a father, who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come forth? Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season, or can you guide the bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightning so that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom and the inward parts are given understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to number the clouds? Or who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens when the dust runs into a mass and the clods cling together? Writer David Henson suggests that in this scripture, Job has been casting a vision of a world overshadowed by pain and suffering. And God responds by showing him the beauty and the hope of the world, this same world. God reminds Job that the work of faith is to hold both halves of the world together, the suffering and the beauty. When my wife, Stephanie, and I were youth pastors in Texas, we took the youth on a mission trip to Houston, and we went into the heart of the city, into the homeless shelters and the soup kitchens. And for a time, the youth were immersed in the reality of the suffering that many people in the city were facing. We had a mission trip leader with us that took us around to all the places. And throughout the trip, he kept kind of pointing things out to us and to the kids. And he would say, look, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful. And it became kind of a running joke for the kids because of how often he would say it. And they would mockingly say, it's beautiful, isn't it? But they saw, they knew that it was. We saw suffering, but everywhere we looked, every person we encountered, there were glimpses of hope, too. And our mission leader, he would point it out. Look, it's beautiful, isn't it? He was showing us, he was teaching us that in the middle of the brokenness of the city, it was all over the place, beauty for us to see and hold on tightly to. I read a quote this last week that said that joy is not meant to be a crumb. Joy is not meant to be a crumb. It's from the poet Mary Oliver. She said, if you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give in to it. Life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back. Whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not meant to be a crumb. Our God, our Creator, our Redeemer, our Sustainer has given us the feast, a feast of joy in this world. The beauty of God is woven into this world around us for us to hold on tight to, for us to see and to know that even amidst life's greatest struggles, still the beauty, the goodness, many blessings of God remain. Thank you.